Hi, everyone. It's Mary Lou Tyler. This week's guest is Steve Hall. He is Australia's leading C-level sales authority, and he says he's never been challenged on that, so we're going to go with that. Steve is an expert on that bullseye that we know about, that center of the bullseye, starting conversations with the decision maker and getting them to the point where they are salivating about wanting to have further conversations with us in order to find out if there's a good fit and how we go about working together. He's also working on another project, which I'm going to ask him about later, called the Executive Sales Forum International. So for those of you who that's piqued your interest, which it did mine, time permitting, I'll ask Steve to talk about it. If we don't have time, we'll put all the information on his page so that if you're interested in that forum, contact Steve and he'll get you all dialed in and set up. Welcome, Steve, to the podcast.
Welcome from a sticky Sydney.
Oh, Steve, that's right. It's summer there. Oh, yes. Sticky.
It is. We've had the air conditioning on, but the room I'm in at the moment is quite warm.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you have shorts on and a Hawaiian top or something, right?
I actually have on shorts and a Tour de France t-shirt.
There you go. Very good. Well, I saw on your LinkedIn profile that you listed yourself as one of the many things that you do well. Storyteller. I am really excited about storytelling. As I told you offline, I met the author of Seven Stories Every Salesperson Should Know, and we could talk a little bit about that, but I really got interested in how the heck do we pull together an intriguing, engaging, memorable story at the top of funnel when we're just starting to introduce ourselves into an account. Now, you're going to take us through the decision maker, how you get in, what you need to say, how you prepare and all that. My question to you up front is, do you also use story in order to start the conversation with your decision makers?
The answer is simple, yes. And I must say, by the way, that Mike Adams' book is excellent and Mike's a really nice guy.
Mm-hmm. And our folks have gotten his information from the podcast a couple weeks ago. So for those of you who don't remember, go back a couple episodes and you'll be able to see Mike's book.
So basically, let's look at the prospect we're talking to. Let's assume we're trying to get through to a company and the C-level executives in that company. Look at their lives. They're important people. We're not just competing with our competitors to speak to them. We're competing with anyone that wants a slice of their time. And that's their board, their shareholders, their peers, their reports, their customers, their suppliers, and anyone else that wants to sell them anything. So there's an awful lot of people competing with their time. So the first question is, why should they waste their time even talking to you in the first place or even reading your emails? Mm-hmm. And in order to get them to do that, you need a story. And a story might just be, I'll call it a value proposition. I'm not a big fan of a lot of value propositions. But you need a reason to get them to talk to you rather than to somebody else. And that's a story, even if it's only a few words. Does that make sense?
Total sense. It just immediately raises this sort of anxiety in so many people, me included, of how can I have a story in a couple of sentences? How does that flow? How does that work? How does it resonate so quickly?
Well, you can tell a story in a very few words. I'm a fan of, I don't know if you know Al Stewart, who's an English singer, but who actually lives in California. And one of his songs, he tells a story in 5 words. Bar conversation, animation, anticipation, disinclination. And there's an entire story in five words.
Right.
So you can do it, but you need to think. So I'll give you an example. Oh, 6 years ago here in Australia, someone approached us and said, look, we're a digital agency. We're really good once we get to speak to senior executives, but we're not very good at getting to see them. They're just too busy. Can you help us? So we said, yes, okay. You know, who's your target audience? And they said, well, really, we can do anything for anyone. And I said, well, that's not terribly useful because we need to focus on someone. So is there a particular industry you have credibility in? And they said, yeah, we've got quite a few customers in retail. I said, okay, great. What do you do for them? Oh, we can do anything. I say, okay, great. But if I go to someone and say, I can do anything, they're going to, you know, it's not going to really cut through. So let's look at retail, which is the their chosen audience. What's the biggest problem retailers have got that you can help them with? Now, at that time, and right now, but at that time, there's a huge furor in Australia about international competition from online retailers. So we created a message which was essentially a very short story. And that message was, we want to talk to you. We've got a guy, Simon Van Wyk. He's a digital expert. And we want to schedule a meeting between you and him to talk about helping you compete better with online retailers. And we reached out to various retailers. And we got meetings with, I think 35 C-level executives out of 90 retailers we approached. And that was a very simple short story about what we wanted to do, and it was about something they cared about.
Mm-hmm.
And incidentally, what I just did, of course, was tell you a story about a story.
You sure did. Now, was this person very famous so that there was name recognition right away to say, oh my gosh, this person is the top of their field. Of course I want an audience with this person.
There was a degree of that. He wasn't internationally or nationally famous, but he was well known enough that if you looked him up, you would find him. Mm-hmm. The thing is, you use what you've got. And what
right.
we had with him was someone who'd been on, you know, that had a degree of profile. If he hadn't, I wouldn't have used, we wouldn't have done it that way. But because he did, that's what we used.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to use, there's a combination of things you use when you're building a story. One is the audience. Who is your audience? What do they care about? How can we use a story that hits the buttons they care about? And then there's yourself and the thing that you want to talk about. And how can we, I hate the word pitch, but we'll use it. How can we pitch what we want to talk about in a way that it resonates with that particular person?
And is the pitch itself, because I just had a conversation this morning with someone about this pitch. I know we don't like to use that word, but that's what it is. So let's use it. But he was saying the pitch is really helping. Yes, it's asking for things, but it's demonstrating value by giving first. Is that a part of this? Okay, yeah.
Well, no, I mean, the thing is, the entire message is about, first of all, you've got to work out what's your objective. What do we want? And your first objective is to get enough of their attention so you can tell them the longer story. Because if you're particular, I mean, again, I don't like this argument about which is best, cold calling or social media, because to me, they're all channels to get a message across.
Yes.
But whether you're doing it via LinkedIn or email or a phone conversation or via referral, what's your first objective? Your first objective is to get enough of their time to tell your story properly. So I always think of it, I don't know if you sail, I don't, but I know that if you're on a boat and you want to get a hawser, you know, one of those really thick ropes they use on boats to tie them up?
Yep.
If you want to get a line between two boats, you can't throw the line across or send it across with a rocket because it's too heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So you send across a rocket or a stone tied to a bit of string, which is tied to a bit of rope, and then you pull in the hawser. So it's the same with storytelling. You have a small story which gets the attention enough to allow you to tell another story, and then the stories get more detailed, more involved, and pull them in more, show them how you can help them more. Does that make any sense?
It does. I have a question about that. We had a book here a few years ago called, I think it was Resonate by Nancy Duarte. And she focused on, there has to be a juxtaposition in your story. What is, what could be, a contrast to jolt somebody. Do you agree with that concept?
I haven't come across it before, but it makes a degree of sense. I mean, a lot of stories, a lot of comedy as well, but a lot of stories depend upon that unexpected turn. But again, I think it depends on the stage that you're at. I mean, Mike talks about seven stories at different stages of the sales process.
Yes.
And if we're talking top of funnel and getting people's attention and getting them to want to know more, then there's a limit on how much time we've got to tell that story. It's got to be a pretty short story.
Mm-hmm. Short story. I was going to say short story, but with an imbalance built into it of some sort. Otherwise, it's just a story. And, oh, that was a nice story. But there has to be some sort of actionable piece to it to get people to jolt them from complacency into wanting to act?
Well, it's a question of them getting them to want to know more. It's not unlike a newspaper headline. In fact, it's very like a newspaper headline.
Okay.
A newspaper headline is designed to grab your attention and make you want to read the story. A prospecting story should make them want to know more and therefore agree to your 20-minute meeting or your longer phone conversation or whatever it is. And you need to generate curiosity, but it needs to be curiosity about something that they care about. So the precursor to that is you need to know what they care about and
right.
know what they don't care about, and that's your product and service.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Features. Product features. It does all these things. Yeah.
Well, even definitely. Benefits. Because when you're talking features and then benefits, sure, if you've got this great product that's got all these great benefits, that's wonderful. But how do you know which benefit is relevant to that particular person in the current circumstances?
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you an example. Just supposing you're a company whose sales are down or whose profits are down, right? You were making 10% profit and now you're making a loss. That's a big problem, right?
Right.
How many different ways are there that you can solve that problem? Well, there are literally hundreds of ways. You can sack people, you can hire more salespeople, you can do some training, you can buy some software, you can do a whole heap of different things to solve that problem. So the problem, you've got to be able to find the problem without just throwing benefits. If you're the benefit you're talking about is improving customer engagement, that might be a total disconnect with what they care about at the moment. Mm-hmm. You've got to start with what they care about and work from there. And I'm talking now about selling at executive level, because if you're selling to a mass audience, if you're reaching out to 100 or 1,000 or 1,000,000 companies, then you can't necessarily do that. But if you're focusing on a small number of large strategic targets, you can spend the time to work out what they care about most and then focus on that and how you can help them achieve that.
Okay, so what we're talking about then, and if correct me if I'm wrong, because we're selling to a smaller audience, we're going to take the time to hyper-personalize, if you will, for lack of a better term, this conversation for this particular person at this particular moment in time with this particular thing, with these particular things that he or she cares about as a person, not a representative of people like him or her, this person.
Yes, and the message, and it's a combination. I mean, we know that CEOs care about certain things, you know, profit, mm-hmm. risk, etc. We know that certain industries have got certain issues, like the retail industry I was talking about a minute ago.
Right.
We know that individual companies have individual problems based upon their circumstances. And it's a combination of those that gets the message. So. Mm-hmm. You know, so we know that if we're talking to people in a particular industry, these are the things they're likely to care about. And then we refine it based upon our research. If we're targeting specific large value customers, if you're targeting an industry as a whole, you can do what I talked about originally with that retail message. You can come up with an industry message. If you're
right.
targeting an individual company, you refine it based upon what the research on that company. And if you're targeting an individual person with that company, you can refine it further.
Okay. Now, when you're getting ready for this, the planning process, on average, are you leveraging technology to help you find these nuggets of information that are unique to the industry, the audience, the company, the person? Or are we still looking and researching online and reading and downloading and trying to figure out what that nugget is? What do you typically use as your recipe for gathering this type of information?
I haven't yet come across any technology that can do that, although I'm certainly not against technology. Mm-hmm. But I think that a lot of AI type technology tends to look at averages and trends, which is good to give you If you can do that, that gives you a good start. But then the refinement I talked about, I think, has to be done by research and using your imagination.
Expand on the using your imagination part. I'm interested to hear what that is.
Well, you know, Einstein came up with the theories that created, among other things, the atomic bomb and nuclear power by imagining riding on a light wave, what it would look like. I'll say to myself, if I was that person in that circumstance, what would I care about?
Right, okay.
Now, having said that, there are lots of things that can help you. I mean, an annual report will tell you an awful lot about what their strategic priorities are.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm talking about perching people at a fairly high level in an organization, because at different levels of an organization, people care about different things. If you're implementing a CRM, for instance, the thing that the CEO wants to get out of the CRM will be different from marketing, from sales, and from the individual salespeople who have to use it.
Right, right. And I know that you were saying before about the value prop, that term is a little bit overused or not defined properly, but we use that term, unique value proposition, in order to uncover the daily tasks that our point person, whoever it is, whether it's in that bullseye, the decision maker, whether it's a direct influencer, next level out, we're looking at their day-to-day life. We're putting ourselves in their shoes, walking through what they do, what they're concerned about, what tasks they perform, and looking for those gaps of what they're doing now and how it can be improved or enhanced by putting a product like ours in. So we're looking for the time wasters, the pains, but also the gains that they can get either socially or functionally within the organization or strategically. And now we have this list of potential story topics that we can talk about.
Well, that's very well put, but that's different to the traditional value proposition, which is our value proposition is X and you must love it.
This is the Mary Lou Tyler version when we have to have multiple touch points for top of funnel. So we have to be able to talk about different things, because we may not know, like you said, what the hot buttons are. So we try a variety of different conversations and flip it on its side. Rather than have one conversation that has lots of stuff in it, we do multiple conversations that has one hot button topic at a time, so that we can see what's resonating, what's bubbling to the top. And that's what we use the unique value proposition for, is task-based, not overall, here's what we do, here's why we matter, here's why you should love us.
Yeah, well, we're talking the same thing, aren't we? Which, I mean, value is in the eye of the beholder. And you're talking about exploring what the value is to those people that you're talking to.
Yes. Yes.
And that, to me, is the way to do it. And even though my specialty is talking at an executive level, that doesn't mean you ignore what I rather disrespectfully call the minions. But the minions you need to talk to as well, because they have a big two things. One thing you don't want to do is spend a lot of time working in the middle of an organization, building up rapport, understanding what people want, putting in a lot of time and effort, only to have the C-level people say, we don't care about that, go away.
Mm-hmm.
But you also, when you go in directly at C-level, you manage to get to speak to a senior executive and they love what you do. At some stage, they're going to pass you off to the people underneath the state and say, okay, check them out. And if they say, I never heard of these, or it doesn't fit our policy, they can kill it dead too. So you need to cover both levels.
Yes. Let's talk about that for a moment. I am sure you are aware that in the States especially, we separate out in some companies the sales roles. We have business development teams who's tasked with starting the conversations and getting to a first meeting in some cases, or doing some level of qualification to help determine whether we should be spending time with the prospect should be spending time with us. Typically, this is a junior position. What are your thoughts on those poor kids that are coming right out of college, given a list where they're to target CEOs, CFOs, COOs of companies?
Actually, I co-wrote an article on this topic a while back with a client of mine. As I've mentioned before, I have to look at things from the perspective of the prospect. if you're a senior executive, how keen are you for some spotty kid out of school to call you and qualify you and see if you're a big enough fish to keep or whether you're going to be thrown back or not? Especially if there were 10,000 of them doing it every day.
Mm-hmm.
I think the junior SDR model is disrespectful. It doesn't work. It burns through the junior salespeople. It annoys the prospects, and it's a curse on the industry. Mm-hmm. Is that mild enough?
Yeah. Loud and clear. Loud and clear, Steve.
As I said, why if I'm a CEO and I pick up the phone and someone's trying to qualify me, am I a decision maker? Have I got a budget? Have I got a need? Pardon my French, but push off.
Right, right.
Why would I take those calls? And less people are taking those calls. More and more people are using voicemail, gatekeepers, which I hate that word too. They're not reading their emails. It's the volume of rubbish that's trying to get through to senior decision makers is spoiling it for everyone.
So what does the ideal sales executive look like in terms of being ready to have these conversations? Is it a 10-year thing? Is it a product knowledge thing? Is it sales skills, mindset, or a combination of the above?
The most important thing is an understanding of the challenges that the prospect has, the implications and consequences, and how you can help them, not so much how you can help them solve them, but that you can help them solve them. In a first conversation, you don't get to how we fix it. You get to, there should be, I know you've got this problem. I know these are the implications of that problem. And we can help you fix it. Let's talk further.
Mm-hmm.
No one wants to know how you can do something until they believe that you can do it. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. There's a constant battle that I'm facing with clients about the level of product knowledge that we truly need to open doors and to get in the door. I've always pushed for the business case knowledge, being able to have the conversations in the language of the person that you're prospecting to belly over the phone, whatever you're doing. But having an understanding, like you said, the challenges, being able to language those challenges in their language, the way they speak, and then also pushing them a bit about the implications if they did nothing, if they sat on the fence, and feeling the confidence and competence to have those conversations, because you're going to eventually turn them over and get them introduced into the people who can get into the bits and bytes of the product. But it's a tough thing to convince people that really we need to focus on the business issues, have a high level of product knowledge, but you don't need to go deep, deep into the weeds to have these conversations, especially the higher up you go.
Well, I'm going to go now, Mary Lou, because you're stealing all my thunder.
But I mean, how do you get that across, Steve? That's your expertise, is how do you act as a change agent, change the minds of these sales managers that they don't need to do that we should focus elsewhere?
It's actually quite simple. Just ask them the question. How do you feel when a junior person from someone tries to sell you stuff and knows nothing and is trying to push their product on you without knowing anything about your challenges?
Mm-hmm.
Do you take calls from SDRs, from business development people? Do you buy stuff from people who call you up and say, hey, we've got this great list of prospects. Do you want to buy offers? I guarantee they don't. They want people to do to others what they want have done to them.
Exactly. I hear you, but it gets lost in the translation. We all know what we should be doing, but to actually do it and actually focus on how to get better at doing it, it's a mystery.
There's an article on my LinkedIn page called The Terrible Truth About Your Prospects. Or is it the terrifying truth? The terrifying truth about your prospects. And the basic message is, there's two terrifying truths about your prospects. One is, they're just like you. And two is, they don't care about you. They care about themselves. They don't care about your new premises, your brand new project, the number of customers you've got, your white papers, your case studies. They don't care about any of those things. They care about their own premises and white papers and customers and prospects. Mm-hmm. So if you want them to, if you want to talk to them, you've got to talk to them about what they care about. We're going back to Dale Carnegie in the 20s and 30s. Talk about the other person, not yourself.
Right. How to Win Friends and Influence People. Still on my bookshelf.
Yeah, good book.
Oh, wonderful book. Well, we're running out of time here. I could talk to you all day, Steve, but I wanted you to give us an update on the Executive Sales Forum International in case anyone is like, oh my gosh, I want to be, you know, good at this. I want to be able to wake up at 3 a.m, have Steve just shake me and ask me a question about getting in the door and I'll know exactly what to say. Tell us about this forum and why it came about and what your expectations are for organization.
Let me ask you a question. Do you know Tony Hughes?
Very well. I love him.
Okay. Well, Tony is one of these guys that accepts everything that comes along, and he's working himself to death. So about 4 months, 5 months ago, I took him to lunch and I said, Tony, you're killing yourself. You're working far too hard. You've got to cut back. And he says, yeah, he says, I know. He says, well, look, one thing, I'm chairing these peer advisory groups, and it's taking a lot of my time for this organization. Did you want to take over this group I'm chairing? And I said, well, yeah, I'll come along and have a look. So I went along, and it's a peer advisory forum, and there's about 14 people there, and they're senior executives, CFOs, CEOs. And it was very good. You know, they talked about each other's issues, they got to know each other, they had a guest speaker, and it was a pretty good session. Now, we decided I wasn't going to take it. They merged it with someone else when Tony gave up. I thought, look, it's a really good idea, but I could see some problems. One problem was it was in the center of Sydney, so I had to get up early. I missed my morning gym session, find a parking spot, which cost me a fortune. And by the time we'd met, had the session, had lunch, my entire day was gone. Mm. And I thought, well, it was great, but asking people, and there was about four people that couldn't make it for various reasons. They were, you know, interstate or they were too busy. I thought, great concept, you know, having people in different industries and different levels talking to each other and helping each other. But it's a big chunk of an executive's time, a day, a month. And you know, you're limited to people in your city. I thought, wouldn't it be great if we did the same sort of thing, but rather than do it face-to-face, we do it online. And rather than do it just with people from your local city, we do it internationally. Hmm. So what we've done, we've said we're setting up an international peer advisory forum with a sales bent, the sales executives, CEOs, chief marketing officers, founders, half from North America and you know, Canada, USA, potentially Latin America, and half from Australia and New Zealand. So there'll be 12 people, there'll be senior executives, and they will get a regular monthly peer advisory meeting, and they'll also get one-on-one executive coaching from me and my partner and a whole heap of other stuff. Because I believe that senior executives, particularly sales-oriented people, they know their industry, they know their customers, they know their products and services, they know their problems, but everyone tends to do the same thing because we're in a bubble. And by expanding their perspective internationally and seeing what other people do in other industries and other countries, they can learn new things, try new things, and maybe get an edge over their competitors by bringing in ideas from elsewhere. And that's the idea of executive, Executive Sales Forum International is a group of senior executives that help each other, that get new ideas, that get executive coaching, and that boost their companies, their sales, and their careers to a new level.
Wonderful. Well, Steve, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. Now, I will put all the information for those of you who would like to speak to Steve on his page. Is there a special place that you'd like us to reach you? Is it LinkedIn? Is it email? If so, give us an idea of where you would like us to contact you.
My LinkedIn profile has all of my contact details. Website, which isn't quite finished yet, but will be very soon, for the forum is execsalesforuminternational.com. A bit long, but okay. execsalesforuminternational.com. I'm a great believer in descriptive website names.
And it's all names that we know how to spell, hopefully. That's always a big problem.
That could be a problem.
All right, Steve. Well, again, thank you so much. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you very much, Mary. It was a pleasure speaking with you too. Oh, and by the way, I should say, we also in Executive Sales Forum International have a panel of some of the leading sales bloggers and authors and experts in the world as our executive panel, and you're on it.
Oh, my goodness. Lovely. Wonderful. Happy to be there. Have a great evening, or it's actually, wait, it is early morning there, late evening here. So have a wonderful day today, Steve. Thanks again.
Take care.